So this is a translation by Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. So he says, who is this mystic power and where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna. For who else can bewilder me? So here's a purport. So Prabhupada writes, Balaram was surprised. This extraordinary show of affection, he thought, was something mystical, performed either by the demigods or some wonderful man. Otherwise, how could this wonderful change take place? This Maya might be some Rakshasi Maya, he thought. But how can Rakshasi Maya have any influence upon me? This is not possible. Therefore, it must be the Maya of Krishna. He thus concluded that the mystical change must have been caused by Krishna, whom Balaram considered his worshipable personality of Godhead. He thought, it was arranged by Krishna, and even I could not check its mystic power. Thus, Balaram understood that all these boys and calves were only expansion of Krishna. Om Jnana Tirumandascha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pasatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna everyone. Gauranga. I'm just very excited and nervous to be here speaking on 10th canto of Bhagavatam. But I'm also very grateful for this opportunity because last week my constant meditation was on this verse. And it's a fascinating chapter and the story is very amazing. So first of all, I'd like to seek the blessings of the devotees here so I can say something which might be quite profound. Of course, empowered by Krishna and the Vaishnava's blessings. So I like to say this presentation or the talk, I've been hearing and reading a lot of stuff, but I'll be sharing things that I heard from a class by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. He's been speaking about this verse, so some interesting points I found quite fascinating. And also I'll be sharing certain pastimes from the book Navraja Mahima by His Holiness Shivram Maharaj, because it's connected to this verse and purport. So today we're reading 10th canto, 13th chapter, which is entitled Lord Brahma Stealing the Cowherd Boys and the Calves. And the verse is 37. And this is a very interesting chapter. This chapter, there are three main points that's discussed. The first main story is Lord Brahma stealing the calves and the cowherd boys to test the potency of Krishna's mystical opulence. Then the second thing we hear, it describes Lord Balaram's bewilderment, how he gets bewildered by this whole story and this whole situation. And the third thing we hear is that Brahma then finds out how this is all Krishna's illusory energy. He offers his prayers, and then this is how the chapter ends. So I thought before we can move on to speaking about today's purport, it'd be nice to just catch up, you know, where we are and what's happened so far. So we hear at the beginning of this chapter that Krishna's killed Agasura, the demon. And now what happens is him and his cowherd friends, they actually go to the forest for a picnic. You know, so it's quite nice. They kill a demon and then they go for a chill out session and have a picnic. It's quite nice. And then, so what happens is the calves, they start going in the fields, deep in the fields because of the green grass. And this becomes the cause of anxiety for the cowherd boys. Then anxiety that, oh, the calves are gone away, we may lose them, and they're taking the prasad. So Krishna says, look, don't worry. You guys enjoy your prasadam. I'll go and find the calves. So Krishna goes off and he goes and tries to bring the calves back. In the meantime, Brahma thought this was a great opportunity to steal the cowherd boys and at the same time steal the calves as well. And because he wasn't sure whether if this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is why he steals both of these. Krishna comes back and he sees that he can't find the calves or his cowherd boyfriends. So he's thinking, what's happening? And then he realizes that this is the doing of Lord Brahma. So then this is the point when Krishna actually expands himself into all the calves that were missing and the cowherd boys. And then this is what Krishna does. And then we hear that this incident happens for a year because Brahma thought I would steal them for a few moments. But of course, there is a time difference between the earthly realm and the heavenly realm. So a moment in Brahma's time is like a year earthly time. And in that 1 year, it's very amazing because the mothers of the cowherd boys were having more affection than they usually have for their sons because now they're interacting with Krishna directly. And the same applies to the calves and the cows. The affection increased. And then what happened was one day, about 5 or 6 days before the year completed, Krishna was tending the calves and he entered the forest along with Balaram. And then Balaram saw this and he was very astonished that why is this affection so increased all of a sudden amongst the cowherd boys and their parents and the calves and the cows. And even Balaram was having this deep affection towards the calves and the cowherd boys. So he was very astonished. And because of his astonishment, it leads us to today's verse where now Balaram is exploring this mystical illusion that's happening. So this is a very fascinating purport because a lot of interesting things are being discussed here. One thing we can actually mention, or I read in Navavraja Mahima, Shiva Maharaj writes that why didn't Krishna reveal this whole incident to Balaram in the first place? So the reason why Krishna didn't do that was because Krishna was afraid that Balaram will suffer separation from his friends. So that's the reason he didn't reveal it. So then question arises that why doesn't Krishna feel the separation also? So Shiva Maharaj writes that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions in his commentaries that actually Krishna also expanded himself as the cowherd boys that were stolen by Brahma as well, so that he doesn't feel that separation. So that's quite interesting. So now we're in this purport where Balaram is exploring this mystical illusion. And he's questioning that, what is this illusion that we're experiencing right now? Is it the demigods or is it the demons that are executing this illusion? But he thought, no, it can't be, because if it was the illusion of the demigods and the demons, I wouldn't come under the illusion, you know, because he's also an expansion of Krishna. So then he concludes that this must be the illusory energy of my master because no one else can bewilder him. And this is very interesting because the topic I want to discuss today is about mystical siddhis, you know, and this is what it's talking about. It's mentioned that both demons and demigods possess mystical abilities. And it's very fascinating. We hear that the demons, their motivation they have ill motives. They have this exploitative mentality for sense gratification. They want to control power, and hence they want to display mystical opulence and mystical siddhis. Now, demigods, on the other hand, they're considered as mixed devotees. They're Kama Mishra Bhaktas, meaning that they want to serve the Lord, but at the same time, they also want to engage in sense gratification. So this is the reason why mystic siddhis are very appealing to them. Of course, not all demigods are mixed devotees. There are few pure devotees of the Lord that comes under the category of demigods. And, you know, one of the chapters I really find very fascinating in the Bhagavatam is actually the 11th canto, 5th chapter, because it gives you the description of the mystical siddhis that yogi principles talk about. Did you know that there are 18 siddhis that one can actually achieve? Krishna writes this. So basically, in the 5th chapter of the 11th canto, it's a discussion between Uddhava and Krishna. And Uddhava is questioning Krishna that, tell me about all the mystical perfection one can actually get. So it's mentioned that there are 8 primary mystical siddhis that one can get, which comes directly from Krishna. And there are 10 secondary mystical abilities you can get, which come from the mode of goodness. And they're really fascinating. Like, I wouldn't mind achieving some of them, you know. I want to go through some of them. There's a mystical ability called anima. Does anyone know what anima means? Anima siddhi. This is a, what was that? Yeah, anima. This is a mystical siddhi that you can become the smaller than the smallest. Do we know any examples from, you know, our Vedic scriptures where someone's actually executed this? Hanuman, right? When he's crossing Lanka, he becomes smaller than the smallest, because he goes into this one demonous mouth and then comes out. He also performs something called Mahima. Does anyone know what Mahima means? Greater than the greatest. Then there's Lagima, which is lighter than the lightest. There's another siddhi called Prapti. It means that you can acquire whatever you desire. You want something? Boom, you can just acquire it. So if you want to do that, aspire for Prapti siddhi. Then there is Prakamya. This is where one can experience enjoyable objects in this world or the next world. That's what this mystic siddhi does. There's something called isita, which means that they can manipulate subpotency of Maya, the illusory energy of Krishna. There's another mystical siddhi called vasita. This means that when you achieve this, you are unimpeded by the 3 modes of material nature. You're unaffected. So modes won't touch you. And there's Kama Vasayita. My Sanskrit is not exactly my first language, but I'm sure you get the gist. But this siddhi actually explains that you can obtain anything from anywhere also. So these are the primary mystical abilities that you can actually aspire for. And Krishna's describing it in this canto. And if you want any of them, Krishna also gives you the process how to do that. But don't try it. It takes a long time. Then there is, Krishna explains that there are 10 secondary mystical siddhis that one can actually achieve as well. One of them is you can become free from bodily needs. So hunger, thirst, all these things doesn't actually affect you. David Blaine has a bit of this, you know, because once he performed this stunt, I remember when I was at uni, he locked himself in a box, you know, hanging in the London Bridge, and he wouldn't eat any food. So he hasn't quite conquered thirst because he was drinking water, but hunger's there, so we know that. You can also hear and see from far. Superman does that, right? He can hear from far. You can see from far. That's another mystical abilities. There's another one where you can move your body at the speed of mind. No need to take aircrafts, you know, if you want to go on a vacation, you know, just have this ability. You can also assume many forms that one desires. And we see that demons do that quite a lot, isn't it? It's mentioned that, you know, Keshi demon actually wasn't a horse. He was a demon, but he took on a form of a horse. Any other demons that you know that took on a form that was a demon? Right, he did. Exactly. Agasura. Anyone else? The first demon, I think, that was sent. We have Putana. She took a form of goddess of fortune. So this is a mystical abilities that demigods and demons both possess as well. There's another one. One of the primary, secondary mystical abilities you can get is called, you can die at your own desire. You can die whenever you want. Who had that mystical ability? Bhishmadev had this. There's also ability where you can know past, present, and future. So the sages in the past actually had this ability also. We hear that when Vyasadev was going to Saraswati River and he was meditating, the purpose of sages back in the days was actually of finding out the welfare of the living entities in the future. They could foresee the future, and this is why they write Vedic scriptures for the benefit of people. So they actually knew past, present, and future. And the last one, which I find very fascinating, is knowing the mind of others. So I tried different experiments to try to tap on that, but I haven't quite got there yet. So as you can see that even our scriptures mention all these mystical siddhis, and it can be quite appealing. So the question arises, why do you think demons and demigods aspire for mystical siddhis? Why? What was that? to control. Okay. What does that do? You're controlling? Great. So try to be, yeah, actually it's a very, very good point you made. Materially, the highest pleasure that one can experience grossly is called sex pleasure. But then they say higher than that is subtle sex pleasure, which is actually having power and control over others. That's what it's mentioned, that this is the highest pleasure you can get subtly. So this is the reason why mystical siddhi is very appealing to those who are not aspiring for pure devotional service. And therefore, demons and demigods actually aspire for these mystical siddhis. It can be very intoxicating and it can make one very proud and egotistic. So it's mentioned that, so devotees also aspire for mystical siddhis? No, why not? What was that? We want to be with Krishna. So it's explained that actually, Bhagavatam and Acharyas explained that devotees do not aspire. Devotees who aspire for pure devotional service, mystical siddhis can actually become a distraction. And the funny thing is, when you read the end of that chapter, the fifth chapter of 11th canto, it's mentioned that devotees, believe it or not, actually have those mystical abilities, but they choose not to have it unless it's used for Krishna's service. Recently, I was reading the fifth chapter of the first canto, which is talking about Narad Muni instructs Vyasadeva, you know, because he's despondent, and so he comes and tells him why he's despondent. So beginning of that chapter describes the glories of Narad Muni. And it says that because Narad Muni is a devotee, pure devotee of the Lord, and his only business was pure devotional service, in the purport, Prabhupada writes, the eight siddhis, the primary siddhis, constitute of very little of his godly opulence. So devotees naturally possess all these mystical opulence, but they don't choose not to aspire for it because it can be a distraction unless you can use it for service. But what do you do if you're fascinated by mystical siddhis? You're an aspiring devotee, you're fascinated by mystical siddhis. How can you purify that? How can you purify this desire of mystical siddhis? You know, we're aspiring devotees. I am. I find it very fascinating. So how can we dovetail that in Krishna service? That's one way, but to get that mystical siddhi takes a long time. How else can we purify this desire of finding mystical siddhis very fascinating? So as mentioned, actually, one way you can actually purify this desire is by surrendering to Krishna. Specifically, why? Because Krishna is known as Yogeshwar. What does Yogeshwar mean? He is actually the master of all power, opulence, and all the mystic siddhis. And meditating and remembering his mystical pastime is actually very purifying, and it actually elevates the consciousness. So I want to just bring about, like, can devotees actually think of any mystical siddhis that Krishna performs? Just on top of your head that, you know. Sometimes, anyways, when I reflect back on this, I feel like I think I take it for granted that Krishna is a mystical person. You know, it's like, it's so common. Yes, Nishkanchana. Yeah. So he expands himself into 16,800, you know, Krishnas. And only he can do that because he can be at everyone at the same time. And he can do that. Any other mystical opulence or pastimes you've come across that Krishna's displaying? Yes? Over a night, yeah, just like click of a button. Yeah, he's just like, you know, transporting everyone to Dwarka as well. And overnight, he did it, right? Maybe we should ask him to come and help us with the Haveli, isn't it? We'd have to wait for 2 years. What do you think, Shiti Prabhu? We can work on it. Any other mystical siddhis or opulence that you've heard? I mean, he's performed so many. It's like, it's amazing. It's interesting how we just kind of oversee it. Srinivas Prabhu. Yeah, he's swallowing the whole forest fire. I mean, imagine doing that. Don't try it, by the way. But only he did that. Srinivas Prabhu? When all the pastime finished, then whole Dwarka went under water. Govardhan, yeah, the common ones. Yeah, he lifted the Govardhan Hill on his little finger, you know, for 7 days, seven night. Nish? Same one? Okay. I mean, we had one in this chapter itself. Yes, Prabhuji? Yeah, he just expands himself, right, and suffocates the demon. And we have this same mystical ability that Krishna performs here, which is in the coward boys as well. So it's very fascinating that Krishna actually performs many, many mystical siddhis. One siddhi I find very fascinating is Mahavishnu. Just from breathing and from the pores of his body, so many millions of universes created. And when he inhales, it all comes back in his body. Yes, Nish? Yeah. Absolutely. And then what does he do? He just takes one morsel, and then all the sages and disciples of Durvasa Muni were satisfied. So speaking of food, Krishna also performs many mystical pastimes with his coward boys in Vrindavan. And it's very fascinating. It says that, so I want to share certain stories from Navaraja Mahima. This is volume 2. And this is a section, same section, where Krishna is going out for picnic with his coward boys, and mystical pastimes are actually performed. So it's mentioned that in Vrindavan, there's a specific areas where pastimes related to eating tasty food actually takes place. And there are four such places. There's one place called Barifa, Vatsavan, Shonk, and Malapur. And in Barifa, there's an interesting pastime that I'd like to share with everyone. That this is a place when the coward boys go for herding cows. They're playing games. They're escaping from demons who come on a regular basis to kill Krishna. And the cowherd boy expend the extraordinary amount of youthful energy. Now, to kind of replenish this energy, what do the coward boys do? They have to eat. So when in Vrindavan, there's abundant of fruits that grows there, and they also have lunch packs that they bring from home. And so, you know, Gopas is mentioned that the diet is made out of what mainly? What's the dietary requirement, the main diet? What do the coward boys actually eat? Dairy products. So we know that they're definitely not vegan, right? So that is main thing, that the diet of the Gopas is actually dairy products. So it's mentioned that, so they have things like yogurt, makhan is mentioned, rubbery, sweet rice. But actually, you know, it's mentioned the most important ingredient in Gopa's meals. Do you know what that is? What is the most important ingredient? No, it's not sugar. It's not sugar. But there's one very important ingredient that the Gopas require when they're enjoying this pastime. What was that? Love. Did you say love? Someone said love? Love. Well, yeah, kind of, but it's mentioned Krishna's magical presence. It's mentioned Krishna's magical presence transforms any meal into an incomparable feast. Just by Krishna being there, the feast just becomes wonderful. You know, it's the most important ingredient in Gopa's meal, but they in the forest of Raja or in King Nanda's, whether they're in the forest or in the dining hall at Nanda Maharaj's palace, Krishna's very captivating presence adds extra sweetness to all things sweet. So yeah, Paramakaran Prabhu, you said sweet, that's true, but Krishna adds that extra sweetness. It enhances all the flavor of each dish and makes every dish like a love feast, Maharaj explains in here. Moreover, Krishna's mystical power also makes fruit ripen out of season as well. You know, which is very interesting. Krishna just said, oh, you want mango? It's off season? No problem. We hear Lord Chaitanya also performs this mystical pastimes of the mango appearing out of season. He can make sweets appear from thin air. And this is interesting. Bodies of water in Vrindavan can be transformed into lakes of yogurt, and small lunch packs manifest an endless supply of snacks. You know, this is a very fascinating mystical ability that Krishna actually demonstrate. So it's mentioned that the boys have been, when they do their herding the cows, they're snacking on the way. So when it comes to lunchtime, they get a bit anxious, thinking that my tiffin is almost empty as my stomach, one gopa says. You know, we don't have enough food. How are we going to satisfy my hunger? Another boy added, say, I can barely have enough to whet my appetite. Why bother eating at all? So in this way, the boys complained to one another and then to Krishna. And Krishna just smiles and he says, friends, do not lament. He said, we should always accept whatever we receive from Lord Narayan's mercy. Krishna says this and to pacify the boys. If we do, we will never be disappointed. So Krishna's explaining that if you just depend on Lord Narayan, you won't be disappointed. And by his grace, a morsel may satisfy any appetite. Without it, even a feast will not be enough. So then being pleased by Krishna's wisdom, the coward boys sat to eat the remnants of their lunches with renewed vigor, only to find that as much as they ate, the tiffins never emptied. You know, so as they were eating the tiffins, their lunchbox continued becoming full because of Krishna's Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Gaur Nitai ki, Jai Jai. So this is very interesting. So Krishna can make this appear. One time again in Barifa, there's another peaceful place called Vatsavan. So in here, an interesting pastime takes place where the boys arrive at their spot to take their lunch and they were extremely very hungry. And they completed everything they had in their lunch pack. So the cows were content with grazing because there's plenty of grass growing there. But it's mentioned that the gopas were disturbed because they had this rumbling sound in the stomach. So one of the gopas, Sridharma finally and others appeal to Krishna, oh brother, for lack of food, we are too weak to eat, not to mention make our way back home. If you do not do something quickly, we will perish on the spot. Krishna felt great empathy for the plight of his friends. So what does he do? He plays his flute. And it says, by playing his flute, the sound conjured are pots of yogurt, rubbery and butter, appearing clusters like small fields of full of pots. Marj is describing. Just by playing the flute, food can appear. Maybe we could make good use of a flute like that during festival time, isn't it? You know, so this is, anyway, so I just wanted to share these two interesting pastimes that talks about mystical abilities that Krishna demonstrates displaying in this pastime about eating. But I was also reflecting that what is the real mystical abilities that we should all aspire for? And I was thinking, the real mystical abilities we should aspire for is actually if we can get that ability to think and see Krishna everywhere, then that's the real mystical abilities that we should aspire for. How can we see Krishna everywhere? So I have some presentation to show you, devotees, because I like models and I like visualizations, and this is how I like to learn, you know. So right now I've changed my strategy in reading Bhagavatam. When I read Bhagavatam and I like a striking point in a purport, what I do is I make up a question. And that question, the answer to that question is a point that I like. So that's one way I read Bhagavatam. Another way I do is there are many different steps in achieving a particular goal. And so to understand the step, I come up with a model from the Bhagavatam. So I have two models to show and share with the devotees, which is my meditation currently. So if someone can just flip the board over, if that's okay. And then I can share these two models. So we're talking about how can we see Krishna everywhere and all the time. So, wait. Can you see that? It's amazing, isn't it? This is all glorious to Shantanu Prabhu. It's quite surprising for a doctor. He's got quite neat handwriting, isn't it? You know, so this is something that I'd like to share with everyone. So we're talking about how to see Krishna everywhere. So in the end of the third chapter, in the first canto, it's mentioned about Krishna's different incarnation. So we can look at the first model. So the goal is that we want to see Krishna everywhere. So in the purport of Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that how do we see Krishna everywhere in every pages of Bhagavatam? So it's mentioned that you can only see Krishna everywhere if we hear with rapt attention. Now, what does that mean? It means that when we hear, we have to have that desperation, eagerness to hear Krishna Katha. And the example in the purport given is of who? Arjuna, who was hearing Krishna with rapt attention, and also Maharaj Parikshit. He was so raptly, like, in tune with what Sukadev Goswami was saying that he didn't even think about that as 7 days and seven nights. So to see Krishna, we have to hear with rapt attention. But sometimes that's difficult. How can we hear with rapt attention? It's mentioned that you need to have purity of mind. Okay? How do we have purity of mind? You have to be pure in your action. And that can only happen when we're pure in our lifestyle. So this is why the four regulative principles are so important. By following four regulative principles, we come to the mode of goodness. And only when our lifestyle is based on mode of goodness can this flowchart actually work. Mode of goodness, we become pure in our action. Mind becomes pure. Then we can hear with rapt attention. Then you can start seeing Krishna everywhere. So that's one model I found quite fascinating in Bhagavatam. Now, the second model is even more fascinating. It describes even more in details. So this is from the second chapter. You know, and we say these prayers in the morning, but, you know, when you see it as a whole package, it's just kind of, it's like Krishna's genius. Prabhupada's a genius. Like he's given the whole package in one. So it's mentioned that the goal is that we want to see Krishna everywhere and engage in his service. That's the goal. How do we do that? So Prabhupada, or Krishna, breaks it down very systematically, Vyasadeva. So he goes that first thing we have to do is we have to serve the pure devotees. Okay? That's the first thing. And this is a power when we engage anyone who's new in devotional service, in service is so powerful because this starts up the cycle. So when you actually engage in serving pure devotees, what happens is you get affinity. That's the exact quotation from the translation. You get affinity to hear Krishna pastime. And the only way you can increase that is by attending regularly, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is a verse that we quote all the time, right? What's that verse? Brother Eshu, Nitin Bhagavatam say it. So this is where it's saying that by attending Srimad Bhagavatam classes, your eagerness to hear increases. And all this can happen by just serving pure devotees. Just by serving pure devotees, this happens. But it doesn't stop there. Let's move on. When we start hearing Bhagavatam on a regular basis, it says that our material desires is cleansed from the heart. Whatever troublesome or despondency we experience in life is because of these material desires. But by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that these desires get cleansed. This is where the purification process starts. So it's mentioned the material desires, which are troublesome, is vanished or gets cleansed. And this is where we start the anatta nivritti process. You know, so things like lust, anger, greed, you know, slowly we start becoming unaffected. Not straight away, but slowly. And as we go through this process, the next verse in this second canto, second chapter of the first canto, it mentions that one becomes fixed up in devotional service. This is a stage of nishta. Nishta is a stage where we're not fully there, but most of our anarthas are wiped out. So what happens in this stage when we become fixed up in pure devotional service is that one becomes free from the influences of passion and ignorance. And it's only at this stage that do we actually become established in goodness. So you can see the connection between this model and the first one, that once you come fixed up, your lifestyle becomes pure, then the action becomes pure and the cycle begins. You can start seeing Krishna everywhere. So this is how one actually becomes fixed up in the mode of goodness. And it's mentioned that when you come on the platform mode of goodness, you actually start experiencing happiness, which is internal. So you're not affected by anything external, you know. But wait, don't get too excited. It doesn't stop there, you know. There is more. Once you come to fixed up stage, then what happens is, now it says the mode of goodness is not our goal. We want to transcend the mode of goodness. So it says the mode of goodness is like a springboard where you can jump to pure goodness. So once we actually come to platform of goodness, we're now raised to the platform of pure goodness. And it is at this stage, it's mentioned that the scientific knowledge of Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed from within the heart. At this stage. So then what happens is, because this knowledge is revealed, it comes to the next stage where it says the knots, there is a knot in our heart, is broken. And you know what this knot is called? What is this knot called? This is the reason why we're bound in this material world. Ahankar. Ahankar is the reason. What Ahankar does is that it confuses us and it makes us lose our ability to discriminate between what is matter and what is spirit. And this is where we start identifying ourselves with the body, false ego. But when we get this scientific knowledge, our discrimination becomes strong. We can tell the difference between matter and spirit, and therefore this knot is loosened. And when this happens, all doubts in spiritual life is clarified, is mentioned. And this stage, one becomes free from karma and entanglement. You know, so we talk about mystical siddhis. When we even have mystical siddhis, you have all those 18 siddhis, you're still under Krishna's illusory energy, which means you're still bound by karma. which means you're still entangled in the material world. So they're quite useless. But when you come to this stage, this is when you become free from karma and entanglement. And at this stage, you will see the master everywhere and you will engage in his loving service unmotivatedly without any hindrance. So these were the two models. That's kind of like my constant meditation. It's a nice way to actually see Krishna everywhere. I don't know, was that model quite useful? Yeah? Memorize it, put it in the consciousness, and then we can start aspiring for it. One thing I would want to share is I went to a seminar by Bhuta Bhamana Prabhu last Sunday. He was talking about Dharma of psychology. Such a powerful seminar, and he was talking about the importance of lifestyle, right? So whatever trouble we have in life, that's just external. But how we interpret our troubles is based on one thing, and that's the mind. At the end of Mahabharata, Krishna tells Yudhishthira Maharaj that you may have won the war, but the real battle begins now, and that's with your mind, right? So which mode does the mind come from? It's actually goodness. So it's mentioned that when our lifestyle is in the mode of goodness, your mind actually functions optimum level. Your mind is peaceful, you know? So it's mentioned that what happens is that we know that modes are competing with each other to dominate the living entity. So when the passion ignorance influence the living entity's consciousness degrade, and this is why they get bewildered. So when our lifestyle is in mode of goodness, the mind is peaceful. When our lifestyle is in mode of passion, the mind is very restless. And when our lifestyle is in mode of passion, ignorance, it's mentioned that mind is lazy, procrastinating, sleeping. So just by analyzing our state of our mind, we can analyze what state of our modes are in. You know, so it's very important, the importance of lifestyle and the mode of goodness. I'm saying this high philosophy, but I'm actually telling myself the importance of the mode of goodness. And once we get there, then we can actually get to the stage of pure goodness. So that was my presentation. I actually want to take the liberty of taking this opportunity to actually express my gratitude to the devotees. As you know, at the beginning of the year, I've been diagnosed with certain illness and I'm going through certain treatment. And I'm really grateful for the prayers, the blessings of the devotees here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, the temple management, devotees in the ashram, that because of their support, I've been going through this journey very nicely. In fact, today I've got my sixth chemotherapy, so I seek everyone's blessings. You know, I'm so hyperactive right now. So every time I go there, I'm super charged up. But then when they do my blood test, they find out your blood count is low, your neutrophil is low, you know, so we can't give you the treatment. So then I'm thinking, why am I so buzzing? And then I realize that this must be the blessings of the devotees, you know, which is helping me go through this journey. So from the bottom of my heart, I really want to express my gratitude to devotees. Keep me in your prayers. I still have 3 more treatments to go. I think Association of Devotees is the key that can really help us achieve, you know, perfection in devotional service. So, you know, if you can't do, you know, it's not my chanting is great, my reading is great, but I think the Association of Devotees refuels that, you know, desire to chant better, to read better. So I want to thank you all the devotees. I hope this model's useful. I've got a few more minutes. If any devotees have any comments or questions, then we can discuss.